91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Today, May 2nd, is National Teachers Day. The idea for it goes back to Eleanor Roosevelt in 1953. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. We have three awardees of the Teacher of the Year honor from Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties. Dr. Evangeline Aguirre is Palm Beach County's honoree from Palm Beach Central High School. She teaches intensive English to non-native English speakers. Third grade teacher Eliana Hurst of Collins Elementary School is Broward County's Teacher of the Year. And in Miami-Dade, it's TV production teacher Rudy Diaz of South Miami Senior High. The teachers share qualities, they're remarkable motivators, and they cultivate strong bonds with students. We'll meet and greet Teachers of the Year after the news. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, it is today's Topical Currents, Tuesday edition. We had a little bit of a technical glitch and accidentally ran the wrong billboard for today, so Dr. Gregory Bush is not with us.
He was with us yesterday.
Of course. Well, this hour we visit with three acclaimed public school teachers. We'll learn more about them and their professions. All have been recognized as Teachers of the Year in their respective school districts.
First, from Palm Beach County, it's Dr. Evangeline Aguirre. She teaches intensive reading and English as a second language at Palm Beach Central High School, where the principal is Darren Edgecombe. Welcome to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good to have you.
And from Broward County, the Teacher of the Year is Eliana Hurst. She teaches third grade at Collins Elementary in Dania Beach, and her principal is Dr. Tracy Jackson. Welcome to you, Eliana Hurst, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And with us now from Miami-Dade Public Schools is Teacher of the Year Rudy Diaz, a broadcast professional. He teaches TV production and broadcasting at South Miami Senior High. The principal there is Gilberto Ponce. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you all, and congratulations to all of you on your achievement. I'd like to begin with all of you. What did winning the award mean to you? What does it mean to you to have won this award? Beginning with you, Eliana.
I was very humbled to be chosen out of all the teachers in Broward County.
Thousands.
Almost 15,000. So it was such a humbling experience. I'm just glad for the opportunity to encourage teachers out there that may have lost their passion and just to tell them keep on keeping on because we make a difference every day.
And you, Rudy Diaz?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, very humbling also from, you know, there's many, many teachers that really deserve this kind of a recognition. I was, you know, just, you know, right in the right place at the right time. But, you know, so, and it means a lot to me because this was not really my first career. My first career was in broadcasting, working at Univision.
Right.
And before that at Channel 10. So it wasn't my career that I studied. And I had to go back to school after I decided, hey, I want to become a teacher. And so I did. I went back to school, and then to, you know, be recognized like this in a second career to me is just incredible.
And Dr. Aguirre.
Yes, this is truly a very humbling experience, you know, for somebody who moved to the U.S. 13 years ago, and for my work in the classroom to be recognized. It's truly a great experience. It's a memorable one. It's one of the biggest surprises of my life.
You're from the Philippines.
Yes, I am.
You know, I was thinking about what an amazing achievement it is for you as an immigrant yourself, and how ironic, with English as your second language, to teach not only English as a second language, but intensive reading. I was wondering how you achieved that mastery of the language.
Well, English is the second language in the Philippines, but most classes back home are taught in English. So, you know, for most of Filipinos, English is the first language. And there's a big influence of American culture in the Philippines. So it's not so much of a big adjustment in terms of language. But with the students I have, the English learners that I have in the classroom, there's that connection that we are all speaking a second language.
Right. So it puts you in a kind of unique situation. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What does intensive language exactly mean?
Intensive reading. It is a course or class offered to students who are in the lowest 25 percentile rank of in terms of reading proficiency. And I teach sheltered intensive reading to ESOL students. So these are students who are new in the country, who do not speak any English, or who are in varying levels of English proficiency.
How difficult, keeping with you just for a moment, Doctor, how difficult is it to for you to deal with the estrangement or isolation that some of these students may feel, coupled with the fact that they don't speak a word of English? Do you have to be psychologist, part psychologist as well?
Well, it goes with the job and the demands of the job. But you know what? I don't, it's not so much of an isolation. Maybe it's an initial feeling that the students have, but we always build on cultural integration. And I think what's imperative in teaching ESOL students is that you make them feel at home. And when they feel relaxed with the teacher and the instruction, that's when they begin learning things then. And it's, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. At some point, you know, it has become just my nature to teach ESOL students. It comes naturally.
We'll just say ESOL means English as a second language.
English for speakers of other languages, yes.
Ileana Hurst, you've taught all of the elementary grades, but you're in third grade now. You particularly enjoy that age group, which is what, about 8 years old?
8, 9 years old, yes. They're mature, a little bit more mature. I started out
but
in
not
kindergarten.
Too mature.
Not too mature yet. They still listen to me. But I started out as a kindergarten teacher, spent about 6 years there, and then I've moved up from first to second, and now I'm in third. This is my second year in third grade.
Mm-hmm. Ileana, you had aspirations other than teaching, in spite of the fact that education ran in your family. Tell us a little about how you made that journey from a degree in finance to becoming an elementary school teacher.
Well, I am a University of Miami alumni business school. I always wanted to do teaching, but somehow I decided to do business. I said, let me start there. And when I graduated, I had a little bit of a struggle finding a job. So I decided, you know, go back to what I wanted to do initially. So I started out as a substitute teacher. And then I said, you know, I really like this. So I found everything that I could do. I became a teacher, an alternative track. I did the alternative certification program through Broward County Schools. And ever since then, I think I've been teaching at Collins Elementary School. 13 years later, here I am.
What does it mean to be board nationally board certified as an early childhood generalist?
Well, I think national board certification is like the epitome of teaching. After you get a chance to, it's a year-long program where you get a chance to intensively reflect on your teaching practice. And it's a program that's honored nationally. And so it was one more thing that I wanted to go after. You have to start it after about 5 years of teaching. So I did that. And you know, only 38% of teachers that tried passed the first year. So it was really exciting when I found out that I passed.
So. What's it like to come to work in the morning? Perhaps you're not really on your best game, and there you have 25 8-year-olds there, all excited and ready, and you have to kind of...
Kind of have to pull it together, you know? I mean, it's more around 18 third graders, about 18 third graders, but I love it. You know, I treat them as if they're my own children. I have 3 children of my own. And so just like the doctor said, she said, you kind of becomes natural for you. So whether you have a good day or a bad day, mommies can't have good days and bad days. You kind of just a mommy. Same
right.
thing as a teacher. You know, you might be having a bad day at home, but once you get to school, you get your game face on and you just love them, provide a safe environment for them.
You must have a real feel for the pulse of those kids together. And get the vibes they send out.
Oh, definitely. Especially you've been doing this for quite some time, and especially 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds, they look to you. They love you. I love them. I'm pretty much their mommy, their daddy. I'm everything for these kids. Their nurse, their doctor, and you know, psychologist, counselor. I provide that safe environment for them, so I can see what makes them tick. You know, maybe it's not sitting by that person. So you, when you are like engrossed with these children's lives because they spend so much time with me, I can really see what I need to do to move them along or help them get ready for the next grade level and beyond for life.
Rudy Diaz, you mentioned that you were in TV production professionally.
Yes, correct.
Which is a little of an understatement. You were an Emmy Award winning cameraman, yes, editor, and with Univision. So right. Tell us more about why you, because so many people have a romantic view of that world, and you had a very successful career in that world. Why did you make the switch?
Well, I'm also a graduate from University of Miami. And, you know, that was my career, communications, and that's what I started in. I did it for about 5 years. And, you know, I love it. And but I wanted to do something more, make more of a difference in the lives of children and the lives of the teenagers growing up. So I decided to do what I loved, which is television, broadcasting, multimedia, anything that has to do with technology. And I said I was going to start teaching, you know, I was going to start teaching. And one day I just did that. I called my boss and I told him, listen, this is what I want to do, you know. And at the time I started researching it, and I was very lucky to find an opening pretty fast in this degree. I did have to go back to school. I had to go back to school and take some education classes because right. I had never really gotten any education classes. So I went back, but at the same time, teaching.
You brought a few of your students with you today. Was that their idea or yours?
Well, I always want to include my students, you know, in almost everything I do, just like I do with my family. And like what she said, it's true. You know, you treat them like your own children. And so I feel it's important to have them here to see, not only because this is the career that, you know, that they're learning and they're probably going to be working in the future, but it was also their idea. I mean, they immediately, I was on the phone, and when they called me, and they were listening, and they said, we want to go, we want to go.
So I guess it was their idea.
It was really their idea, but, you know, it doesn't take me much to push me a little bit to, you know, tell them, yeah, sure, definitely.
And did you drive in the car that you won?
No, actually, I gave that car to my daughter.
Ah.
I gave that car to my daughter.
I would think that your class is probably one of the most in-demand classes at the school. Is that?
You know, it is. Some students don't really know what it takes. You know, they're used to seeing the finished product so many times on TV, and they
right.
think that, oh, it's so easy to do, and they don't know the hours that it takes to plan, to produce, to shoot, to edit. So, you know, it is popular. In fact, this year I've gotten a large number of students because I have, it's not just a class, a regular class, it's a magnet program, and it's also an elective class. So I have two of my...
So it brings students from across the county.
Right, exactly. And our superintendent, you know, Mr. Carvalho, has done a great job of really promoting the magnet programs. And that has done a great, you know, I guess it's gotten it out there to show students that they have a choice and maybe start a little early in deciding what they want to do as their career.
It's National Teachers Day today. We're speaking with outstanding educators from Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. Rudy Diaz from Miami-Dade. Eliana Hurst is from Broward. And Dr. Evangelina Aguirre is from Palm Beach County. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back.
And we return 21 minutes past 1 o'clock. It's today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman, and we're focusing on Teachers of the Year here on Public Radio.
Eliana, I was wondering, do you, at such a young age, find yourself getting emotionally involved in the lives of your students? I'm thinking in particular children that are from troubled homes.
I think that no matter where you are as a teacher, young age or older, that you will inevitably get drawn in to their world. And sometimes for myself, I find that the most challenging thing is seeing things that I can't control. But I just keep reminding myself the thing that I can control is what I do here for these children. So,
have you ever been in a situation, it's probably a sensitive topic, but where you felt a student was being perhaps abused at home? And if you are ever in that position, is it your responsibility? Do you have to report that?
Yes. As a good teacher, you have to report anything that you think, because that child doesn't have anyone that will be the advocate. That's something that's my responsibility. And so there is a protocol in place in Broward County, the guidance counselor, you know, child protective services, that you have to follow even if you suspect that something is wrong. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What about parental involvement, particularly of the elementary school teachers? Dr. Aguirre, do you find that parents today across the board really do stay involved with their kids in their schools?
Yes, I do think that most parents stay involved with their kids. In Palm Beach County, I'm the president of Palm Beach TESOL, so I developed a program called Reading Runs in the Family. So with Reading Runs in the Family, we normally host reading activities with parents and kids. So for them to experience how it is, how reading is actually implemented in the classroom. You know, through the years, what I've realized is that parents are most willing to help their kids. But the question is how, you know. So through that program or constant communication with parents, we're able to equip them with the necessary tools and skills for them to reinforce learning at home.
With your long tenure as a teacher, have you seen as time goes on a shift in your students between their literacy being more literate in digital media rather than books? What effect will that have on them in the future?
I would say so. You know, I'm glad that, you know, there are teachers like Rudy here who really reinforce the use of media in literacy. But at the same time, I also, my students are below the socioeconomic level, okay? So in terms of digital literacy, it's quite a challenge for them to have that. And the parents too, you know? So there's some kind of a gap with what's out there for the kids and what we would really want them to actually experience in the classroom. So with the little with the resources we have in the classroom, for example, with iPhones like that, and we download books, so I let the kids experience that. But in our district, the administration has been very generous in providing the necessary technology for the students mm-hmm. to reinforce literacy. We have a whole lot of reading programs, online programs available for the students that they could use in the classroom and also use at home.
In Palm Beach County, you also must get a lot of migrant children.
Yes, we do.
Well, I just had another tough question. I'm going to save it. Rudy, I would imagine that TV production's probably seen more technology changes than maybe any other area, and you've been doing this for 30 years. What are some of the most important changes you've seen?
Well, going into the digital age, for example, we started off with taping everything to videotape.
Right.
And that transition going from editing on a computer going from editing from machine to machine, it has changed tremendously. So they really don't know that that kind of technology
right.
back then, but that has changed very, very, very much. And also when we videotape, when we do our shooting, our camera shots and everything, you know, it's all done digitally. So that also has helped. Actually, the technology has helped tremendously, because now, before, when we had the standard cameras, you had a lot of moving parts.
Right.
Same thing with the VCR. You know, you have a lot of moving parts. And if that broke...
You mean things that can go wrong.
Things that can go wrong because, you know, they got electric motors and all that stuff inside. And if that broke, that had to be fixed, and it couldn't be something we can fix ourselves. Now with the technology, we fix it all ourselves, and we do it in the class. We build our own computers. Since the cameras shoot digitally, you know, we don't have those moving parts, cassette to put
right,
in
right.
and all that. And that has helped. So that technology, and now we're moving into something, because I always try to keep them ahead of the technology, way ahead. And we're actually doing a documentary on the Holocaust. It's a documentary done in virtual reality. And
what does that mean?
Virtual reality is, you've seen it, it's this headset that you wear, and it immerses you into a world without being there. And that's what we're working on now. And, you know, we're in the infancy stages, but we're working on that. We're creating a world where it's a documentary. So it's going to be a documentary on the Holocaust.
What aspect of the Holocaust?
Basically, the Auschwitz. Okay. We interviewed a survivor of the Holocaust. And what we did was we interviewed him. So it's going to be more of a documentary type, but instead the person is sitting down with his headpiece where maybe it transitions from, let's say, photographs of historical photographs, mm-hmm. and then it transitions and they're immediately immersed into the center of the camp. Wow. And that's where the differences come. And then they'll see the trains coming in and everything. They'll be able to almost feel like they were there. And I think that brings in a different type of emotion to the viewer. Mm-hmm. And we're doing all that. We're recreating the camps in three-dimensional graphics.
Wow.
So we're doing that. And they're really, you know, having a great experience doing that.
That's
because
incredible.
We're going to try to do that in different areas, not just the Holocaust. We're going to move on to other areas too and help it in teaching, for teaching other students about science and technology through virtual reality.
I was just going to ask, like, what is the goal of every, I mean, I guess it would be the school year. You have students
right.
for the whole year.
Yeah.
Is it to make, is there a finished product?
Yeah, well,
out?
We do a newscast every day. We
oh,
do two
okay.
broadcasts. We go on in the morning and in the afternoon. That's our main thing. But technology, like you said, has changed a lot. So it's not just about TV production. It's about virtual reality. It's about augmented reality, which is similar to virtual reality, only that it includes reality in itself. In a virtual reality, you're immersed totally in this world. In augmented reality, you have the headsets, but you can see what's around you. But in addition to that, it's augmented by adding technology, screens maybe that you don't see, you know, almost like, I forgot the movie, but what was it called? Forgot this movie that, you know, that they're able to just touch technology right on the air, you know, like in the midair hanging. Like if you have a monitor, this room may be filled with monitors.
Oh, okay.
And in reality, they're not, you know.
Right.
I forget the name of the movie. But that's what we do. So we do have a show. We do packages, news packages for the actual show. We have sports. We cover sports. The students go out. They videotape events, whether it's basketball games and so forth.
And the old-fashioned radio?
We don't do radio, but one of my students that's sitting in the other room.
Doesn't get him excited, huh?
Yeah. No, actually, you know, I have a student that his name is Jesus, and he has been telling me, hey, why don't we do a radio station? Maybe they can hear it during lunchtime and stuff like that. We could put it. And, you know, I mean, this year has been kind of tough, but, you know, I'm thinking about mm-hmm. it. I'm thinking about it.
I'm thinking that the equipment must be pretty expensive to keep up with that, you know, for the school district.
Well, you know, I mean, they give us funds. And but, of course, enough funds is never enough for the technology that you
right, because it changes.
That I want, you know. So you just have to be knowledgeable in the type of equipment that you're going to purchase. Okay, that's a very key factor, and something I'd like to teach other teachers in, and you know, teach them with that kind of technology of what to use in their classrooms, because they may want to go and buy maybe an intercom that costs, you know, thousands of dollars for the TV industry, but we resolve it by $100 phone, wireless phone that has intercom. And we do it that way. But our money, we spend it more on our technology, that things like cameras and you know, editing equipment and things like that.
We're talking to Teachers of the Year on this National Teachers Day on today's Topical Currents. If you'd like to join in with a comment or a question, you're certainly welcome. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. 1-800-743-WLRN. Also, email. That's available, radio@WLRN.org. We'll take a short break on the program and be back with more.
And welcome back to National Teachers Day on Topical Currents. We're speaking with three teachers of the year, one from Miami-Dade County, that's Rudy Diaz, one from Broward County, and that is Eliana Hurst from Collins Elementary School, and Dr. Evangelina Aguirre is from Palm Beach Central High School, and Rudy is with, don't say it, I'm going to have it right here, he's with South Miami Senior High School. Okay, I have to ask you, Eliana, how
when you were teaching kindergarten, did any of those kids have iPhones?
No.
Okay.
No, that started in 2000. I started teaching kindergarten in 2004.
Ah.
So it wasn't as prevalent then, no.
But how many, does every third grader have a cell phone?
No, not in my school. We have a couple of kids that do have cell phones, and usually they keep them in their bags away. So they're not playing on them.
Right.
Airplane mode. Huh? Yes. Off.
Do you still is cursive still taught in schools?
Probably at the end of the school year, to be honest.
Really?
Yes. Cursive. Yeah, it's kind of taken a back seat to what we try to focus on is more of the soft skills, not just academics, but making sure that they can work together. I feel like that's a big, big deal for them, that character building, making sure that it's not just about going to fourth grade, not just about getting good grades. It's just making sure that you can get along with others, making sure that you can work as a team. So cursive kind of gets put on the back burner.
Dr. Aguirre, how do you keep current and keep up to date on the new trends in language instruction?
I personally invest in attending conferences, and I do presentations in different conferences, national, local, and international conferences. And I read a lot. That's what I do. And, of course, I do a whole lot of networking, and I pursued a higher degree. That's my doctorate degree. Teaching ESOL students, just like teaching math and doing technology, that is a highly specialized skill. You know, you just don't place teachers to teach ESOL students, because with that, it involves language development, literacy, social interaction, acculturation, assimilation, you know, assimilating the new culture.
Right.
It's just a big embodiment of so many skills and so many aspects of instruction. So that's what I do. I just don't stop learning. You know, if I demand I don't demand anything of my students that I don't demand of myself. So if I want them to keep learning, I want them to see that I am, you know, always in pursuit of learning, and that's what I do.
I see that in addition to being Teacher of the Year of Palm Beach County, you were the 2016 Florida Reading Association Teacher of the Year. You'll be recognized as the 2017 Sunshine State Outstanding Educator Award very shortly. And you're your school's nominee for the Dwyer Award.
Yes.
And that's just a few of the awards I see you that you have. What do you consider is the most important aspect of your work, and why are you getting all these awards?
You know,
if you could guess.
During my first year of teaching in the U.S. in 2004, my former principal, God bless his soul, selected me as the Rookie Teacher of the Year. And so after the awarding, I asked him, you know, there are so many teachers, but why me? And he said, you know what? I could go inside your classroom. I could give you a pen and give you a content, and right away you could come up with a, you know, highly exciting and comprehensive lesson. I think it's the year of experience. The acknowledgments and the awards are a recognition of the number of years I've been in the classroom and all the skills that I have as an instructor and the contributions I've made in the lives of students I have in the classroom. But one thing I truly recognize as one of my best skills as an educator is my ability to connect with my students. You know, you could be the most knowledgeable educator out there, but if you don't have that skill to build relationship with students, nothing of that skills, you know, matters. Because when students believe that you are very serious about what you do, you know, that you are sincere about helping them, educating them, they feel that. And they would do anything for you, and they would deliver for you. And, you know, that's something that's different. That's why they would ask, you know, kids, like today, I said, well, I have to leave because I'm going to a radio station. They were excited about it. And they were like, why? It's like you have to explain to them why you have to be absent. You can't be absent. And if I tell them I have to attend some PDs, they're like, I'm going to be absent tomorrow. Why? You won't be here. You know, and to be humble about it, you know, with all humility, it's like I'm happy that I'm one of the reasons why my students come to school. You know, and that's one of the blessings and the gifts of being an educator.
That's the essence, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, learning sinks in. And you know why? Because I try my very best that when I teach them content, they are able to apply that to real life experiences. You know, I just have to share very quickly, we're doing project-based learning. So we were reading this article about education in the United States, and they were like, oh, that's so complex for ESOL students. I said, nope, I'm going to break it down. So what I did was I had them investigate and conduct classroom-based research on culturally bound concepts in terms of education in their own country. Why education in Honduras is like this. And they investigated on that, and they put together all their concepts. And so then the kids sat down and analyzed. So we have common problems in our native country,
right,
as regards education, economy, corruption, lack of resources, you know, lack of efficient, effective teachers.
So there's common ground.
And that alone brought them to the text we were reading. And so the students came up with their own mission and vision of what education should be. So it brought about real experiences, and that gave me an idea of what my students actually need. So, you know, learning always becomes meaningful for the students, especially for ESOL students, where they have to learn context. They are held in the same accountability as non-ELLs. They have to take the same exam regardless of their English proficiency. So there's a very, very big demand that we're expecting from them.
Ileana Hurst, is teaching more instinctive, or is it training? I suppose both.
It is. I think it's a combination of both. I remember when I first started teaching, I knew it was something that I wanted to do, but I was a little bit fearful. First of all, it was like 18 kindergarten kids. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so scared. But once I got
in there. You were nervous before you came on the air today. You've done fine.
Yeah.
Anxiety. However, I got in there and I realized, you know what? I have to do the best I can by these students. So intuitively, you decide you're just gonna put 150% out there, and you have to have that withitness so you can know exactly what's going on in your classroom, and plus talent, plus trying to develop, you know, professionally and keep going and keeping fresh and new with whatever is out there. You know, with the technology at elementary level, just making sure that our kids are ready for when they do get to the broadcasting program, nothing looks foreign to them, you know.
When you teach your students to read, do they read from books or computers?
Both. We have reading programs, and when I first started out, was not as many reading programs, but both. I get the opportunity to see kids first learn how to read.
Right.
From going from A, A to cat and the sight words. I get that opportunity. So from both, you know, you have to keep it fresh. You have to keep it interesting. So
we hear a lot about bullying and violence in today's mm-hmm. schools. Do you see that? And if you do, how do you deal with it?
Well, I at our school, we have a school-wide positive behavior program. And we try to educate the whole school on what bullying is and how people who are at standby or who are looking, they also have a role. They have to do something about it. So we educate the students. But also within our own classrooms, we try to create a community, a culture of helping each other, looking out for each other. We're a family. I say that so much. We're a family. We might, you know, might argue now and then, just like your own brothers and sisters at home. But we're a family. You are Mrs. Hurst's children. So if one person is hurting, we have to figure it out. We mm-hmm. cheer for that one, and we hurt with that one. So that's pretty much how we deal with it.
That's amazing. That's very good. And I know they have that in Dade County Public Schools, too, a program about
maybe
that.
Maybe some of
Rudy.
The videos of students yes. address that subject.
Yeah, right? What yeah. we do is we address those subjects by creating a video, and this is produced by them. So they produce what is close to them. So if they feel they need to, you know, address whether something on bullying or a social issue of some sort, we do public service announcements and we do stories that gear to
right.
that. And, you know, whether it's texting and driving and we put it on through our broadcast and it's created by them. So it's made by them. So it means more.
Have any of your students over these 30 years made it in the professional world of television?
Yes.
Yes, they
yes.
have.
Yeah, that's a huge. I have a wall in my studio of call it the Wall of Fame, where I have several students. You know, Julia Bagg, Channel 6, Marissa Bagg, Channel 6. She's an anchor on the weekends. Carlos Suarez, Channel 10. He's an anchor also on the weekends. you know, and the list,
the
goes,
list
on.
Goes on.
I mean, yeah, Ryan Young, he's a correspondent for CNN. We have Jesse Rodriguez, he's a producer in New York for the Morning Joe. So there, yes, I mean, these are in front of the camera. We also have behind the camera where they basically, you know, includes camera work, editing, editors, producers, directors. So we have a variety of different people.
You never had the urge to be in front of cameras?
Myself? No, not really. You know, my thing has always been behind. But, you know, I'm very happy there.
Eugenia writes, listening from work and had the idea question, do you think students could be interested on creating a podcast series with audio sound effects and all?
Would they be interested?
That's what Eugenia is asking.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really gotten into podcasting. That is something I, maybe with this idea of getting or doing a radio station and doing maybe that, that's going to be a little bit more of a segue to it.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be something interesting. I mean, I know that I'm particularly very interested many times in podcasts because they kind of hone in on a particular area that you're interested in listening to.
You can tell them the money's in TV.
Yeah, it is. It is. The money is in TV. But me as a listener, but as a listener, I like to listen to those things because a lot of times I like to listen about, you know, whether it's broadcasting or, and they don't have those type of stations.
Right.
So that could be something that we could work on. It's a great idea.
Okay, I don't know what Eugenio was asking for, if he had a reason, but there's your answer.
But yeah.
It's National Teachers Day. We're speaking with Rudy Diaz from Miami-Dade County, Teacher of the Year, Eliana Hurst, Broward Teacher of the Year, and Dr. Evangeline Aguirre is Palm Beach County Teacher of the Year. Our number again, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-WLRN. Our email is radio@WLRN.org.
And we're back with today's topical currents, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, Dr. Evangeline Aguirre, Eliana Hurst, and also Rudy Diaz, our three Teachers of the Year in Palm Beach, Broward County, and Miami-Dade. I start with you, Rudy Diaz.
Yes.
What are some of the frustrations you may face in teaching?
Frustrations?
Isn't always so positive.
No. You know, sometimes the students, they come in with issues that, you know, go beyond the classroom, you know what I'm saying? And their mind sometimes is on that. And I am always there to try to counsel them and guide them. So those are some areas that, you know, they come to the class sometimes, they have problems at home, maybe they have, private, personal problems. So, you know, they come with that in their mind, and I can see how, even though it's an exciting class and everything, it's kind of hard to have your mind on TV production concepts or camera composition or something like that when, you know, you have so many issues. So some of them, so I guess that's a little bit, but that's where I come in, and I try to help them, and they understand that that you know, I'm here for them to try to guide them, and obviously if I can't, I refer them to the counselor, which is what I usually do, but I also am there for them. And like some of the other panelists said, that if they know that you care, they'll do anything for you.
Are you a tough teacher? Is your class difficult?
You know, it's not. I tell them that all the time. I feel like through the years, I think I've gotten a little bit more, maybe, I don't know what you want to call it, understanding or whatever, you know, or not so stringent on certain things, and give them maybe some, because my class is a class where they have to have a certain amount of freedom. I mean, they're not just sitting down in their desks and that's it. That's to me, that's a little bit easier.
They have to select a project and then complete
that. Yeah, then I have like four rooms, studio, control room, and they are all working inside there, and I have to make sure that, you know, they are, you know, being responsible. So in that sense, I can tell you that my students are very responsible. I'm not going to tell you there are times that I get upset with them or that I don't get upset with them, that they're not doing something the way they're supposed to be doing it. But, you know, really, I am blessed to have the kind of students that I have. I cannot ask for better students than what I have. And I love them tremendously. To me, they're like my kids, like they mentioned before also, because if they're down, I'm down. And, you know, I always try to be there, and they know that. And I think if they know that, you know, half that battle is won.
I think all of you are making it so clear why you were awarded Teacher of the Year. Eliana, do you have your own role models? I believe your grandmother was a principal.
She was a principal. You know, I was raised in the island of Nevis, so we say headmaster down there. Yeah, she was in public education for 35 years. So I would be sitting on the porch, and I have seen adults come by and, can I see Teacher Myrtle or Mrs. Guichard? Because they want to come and say thank you. I mean, she's been. It was so amazing. So that's how I grew up, constantly, maybe summers, whenever somebody came, returned, that they may have gone to the United States or gone to England to live or gone into other islands in the Caribbean, they would always return, always.
And your father was a professor.
Yes, my father is a professor, yes. Or was. He's retired now at City University of New York, Brooklyn.
Hmm. Oh, so, okay.
Yes. So I've seen a lot of people who are passionate about education. And so I kind of followed that path, kind of a roundabout way, but I got here.
You look for a higher degree or anything, a doctorate? Or?
Yes, I do have a master's degree in curriculum instruction since my bachelor's was in finance. So I knew I wanted to learn more about the educational field. I would like to have my PhD probably in educational leadership or more in curriculum. I'm just not sure when.
Is teaching pretty much a two-way street? Do you feel you learn as much from your students as they're learning from you?
Yes, I definitely learn so much from them. Just even about their lives and about their culture, or, you know, having been raised in a Caribbean culture, the American culture was a little bit foreign for me in the beginning. So even learning from them about their culture, you learn so much from them. And so much.
And Dr. Aguirre?
Yes, I feel the same way. You know, every day is an opportunity for me to help my students. At the same time, they make me a better person. You know, they test your patience, mm-hmm. your creativity. You know, sometimes in the classroom you're teaching and you're all set on a particular activity, and then, no, they're not picking it up. You know, it's not exciting enough as you thought it is or it should be. And then, you know, you have to be flexible and creative. And, you know, you learn so much about people, about life, about how kids think, and you process that. And at the end of the day, you think like, my God, I learned so much today. And students think that it's just them learning. But we learn so much from our students.
One of your students is quoted as saying, and I've excerpted this from this passage, each of Dr. Aguirre's lessons is a lesson full of love and real life relevance. She changed my life. She helps her students discover their potentials.
Yeah. And that was a student, that's going to make me cry, but that was a student who entered my class. She's from Colombia, not speaking any English, and would resist learning. You know, she was fighting the whole thing, and then came to my classroom every lunch to learn English, to study, to read. And then she's graduating, all A's, going to university here in Miami, and you know, and there are so many other stories of success stories of those kids. But you know what? Not all students end up that way, but there's no such a thing as small success in the classroom. Success is success.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have high school aged students. So there really is a lot of pressure on them, and they probably are more influenced by peer pressures and pressures for them to learn the language properly.
Yes, it's a big, you know, just imagine if you don't speak French and you sit in a classroom not understanding anything that everybody's talking about.
Exactly.
And how the American educational system works. It's a lot of work. It is a lot of work. That's why the challenge is to sustain that motivation of students, ESOL students, to stay in school. That, you know, it's tough to learn a second language, but you're going to get there. You just have to keep working. So, you know, you keep that interest. So that's why the demand is for me or for all other teachers to make it a point that learning is exciting and relevant. And at the end of the day, they tell themselves, you know what? I learned this particular concept and main idea, and that's something I could apply at the end of the day at my home with the way I deal with people or any other content or context that you study in the classroom. So,
Eliana, you're in a kind of unique position because I'm thinking at 8 years old or maybe some are a little older, you know, you're not so far from puberty in a lot of these children. That must be, is that a challenge?
Peer pressure puberty is not really a challenge for us in third grade. What can I say?
Well,
you know, pretty much I try to constantly, you know, you're my family, we're a family. We try to just focus on just building that community in the classroom. I haven't really had any issues with puberty or any of that, right? I'm so glad.
Yeah. Okay, that's
Third
good.
Third grade is great.
What do you do to unwind? What kind of recreation do you enjoy?
What do I do to unwind? Well, you know, when I leave my job at school, I have my job as a mom. So I guess
those ages are?
It's three. The baby's three. I have a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old. So
3, 10, and 12.
Yes. So they're pretty spread out. So unwinding pretty much would be just hanging out with them and just playing and just enjoying family. I am just that type of person. I'm a homebody. I like being at home. Most people don't really get that. But I like being at home and just being with my kids and my husband. I like that. Is that weird? I don't know.
No.
I don't know.
Dr. Aguirre, I'm wondering, since the atmosphere has changed a lot, you know, in the world of immigration since the election, are you encountering fear in some of your students with that situation?
Prior to the election, yes. So I made the lesson out of that. We did a whole lot of brainstorming with as regards to the issues at hand. And yes, there, you know, some kids are a little bit scared about the situation. But it's a reality that the students have to face. It's a little delicate matter to discuss on air, but we do a whole lot of discussion of that in the classroom.
Okay. That's what I was...
Well, it's been a very interesting hour.
It has. It's been a great hour, and we congratulate all of you. Rudy Diaz is the Miami-Dade Teacher of the Year. He teaches TV production at South Miami Senior High School. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Eliana Hurst is the Broward Teacher of the Year. She teaches third grade at Collins Elementary School in Dania Beach. Eliana.
Thank you.
And you didn't seem nervous. Dr. Evangeline Aguirre is the Palm Beach County Teacher of the Year. She's a reading and English teacher, including English as a second language in Palm Beach Central High School.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for joining us this hour. Today's program was produced by Polly Landis. Technical direction from Michael Stock. Jason Zabka is online producer, and our lead producer is Richard Ives.
Rudy, can we see your newscasts?
Yes, we have, if you go to cobratv.net, that is our webpage, and what we do there is we have a link that you can actually visit and see all of our programs.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
And it's easy to download Topical Currents at our website, WLRN.org. Tomorrow, we hear a story of toxic chemicals and unknowing victims in office buildings. Our guest is attorney Alan Bell, who's written the book Poisoned, How Crime-Busting Prosecutor Turned His Medical Mystery into a crusade for environmental victims. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman with you this afternoon. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.